Have you ever wondered how sound can heal, inspire, and transform your life? What if the vibrations around you could unlock your true potential and guide you to a deeper sense of harmony? Welcome to Sound Pathways, the groundbreaking journey into the healing power of sound, creativity, and connection with your host, Dr. Karen Olson. In each episode, she explores the profound link between your mind, body, and spirit. From composers and musicians to sound healers and visionary leaders, she'll dive into captivating conversations that reveal how sound shapes your reality, heals our wounds, and helps us manifest our dreams. And guess what? You're part of the conversation. So call in and ask questions and experience personalized sound healing live, and let your sound be your guide to the life you've always dreamed of.
Hello, welcome to Sound Pathways, where we explore how faith, music, resilience, and dreams ignite the human spirit. And I am so thrilled to have the amazing Lakeisha Benjamin with us. We're going to talk about the fire within, the courage, faith, and her saxophone soul. She's 5-time Grammy nominated saxophonist, a composer, a UN Global Ambassador of Music. She headlined at the Hollywood Bowl and the Newport Jazz Festival. She was seen on Stephen Colbert for a whole week and NPR Tiny Desks, and it's been on the largest global stages with the legends right next to her, and she's in front. She was honored as jazz vocalist, jazz saxophonist and artist of the year, and she has a heart of gold. Her light and her love and her soul is in every note. And I am so honored. And I want to share the first time I met you, I was going into an event in New York City and I was so frazzled. I'd been in traffic. I was late. And there she was in the elevator and she goes, "Come on, I've got you. It's not a problem." And from them, I didn't even know who she was. And there she was. She called me the Viola Lady. And she took me under her wing, and I soon discovered that everybody knew Lakeisha Benjamin, and there she was. And here she is supporting us here on Sound Pathways, and I'm so excited, so excited. Thank you so much in your busy schedule.
Oh, thank you for having me. Such a wonderful time.
It's been so much fun to watch you just explode. So what does it feel like to be on these huge stages and you look out and you see all these thousands of people and you're just on fire? You're channeling something so much bigger than yourself. What does that feel like?
I think it almost feels like in some ways like you're in a dream, because it's something that you thought about your whole life, something you wish for your whole life. And not only to be in big stages like that, but to have the audience interacting with you, having a good time, to be sharing the music together and sharing that feeling, I think is one of the best things in the world.
That is so cool. And it didn't, there's so many things that didn't just kind of just happen, besides, of course, your talent was there, but you practice 8 hours a day sometimes.
Yeah. I try my best. When I first started, it was definitely between 8 to 10. And now I try my best to just at least get 3 to 4 in, or just whatever I can around the gigs and the schedule.
Wow. That is so amazing. And what did Herbie Hancock say about you?
I don't know. You have to ask him yourself, but I guess the times I spoke to him, I work with him at an International Jazz Day in Morocco, and he wanted me to personally come do some workshops and master classes with him for the students there in Morocco and play together and get more acquainted, but to also share. He thought I'd be a great example for the students. And then during the performance, we played his Cantaloupe Island together with Marcus Miller and everybody. I talked to him another time where he told me he was excited that I was nominated and said, you know, congratulations for, you know, reaching that kind of milestone. So he's always very, very supportive. And I think one of the last times I told him, he said, "Damn, you can play." That was cool.
Wow, that is so cool. So cool. There's so many things I'd love for you to share. And one is, I felt so deeply moved and sad when you're Papa passed away, and I could just feel the connection and how he's still with you and just so proud of you. And how did it all come together? Like, that he supported you and just the beginnings and how you knew that the saxophone was your voice. How did that all come together?
Yeah, when I was a kid, he would call up to the house all the time and ask my mom how I'm doing, and I would talk to him on the phone, and she had told him that I had a student saxophone that I had taken all these Bugs Bunny stickers and put all over it. It was the school saxophone. They were like getting mad at me and going to suspend me because I messed up the saxophone, all these Bugs Bunny stickers. And I was like, because I don't have my own saxophone, but this is like my saxophone. So I kept telling him about it, telling him about it. And then one day, he called me up and told me to meet him at my grandmother's house, and he took me down to Sam Ash. And we went in the store, and he said, "Which is the saxophone here that you've been wishing to have?" And I said, "Oh, you sure it's going to be like $3,000?" And he told me to point it out, and I pointed it out. And they said, "Oh, we don't have any new ones, just the one that's in the storefront." And he was like, "Oh, we'll come back." I was like, "No." So he grabbed that one out, and they polished it down in the back, and he just put his credit card down and brought it. And he said, "Now go make us proud." So
Oh my gosh, how
that's how
old
I
were
got my
you?
first sax. I was 18 at the time.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That is so exciting. Do you still have that?
Yeah, of course. I have it all the time. I used to play it up until the last 4 years. I used to That would be my main sax that I played, but now it's more reserved for special people, and I play two other custom-made ones.
Ah, that is just so amazing. So what do you remember when the first spark that told you had this music in you and that saxophone was your voice?
I guess like the first time it came up, I was in a fifth grade, and the option came up to have chorus, band, or art. So they were like, "Oh, would you like to be in chorus?" Probably because I'm a girl. And I was like, "Oh, I don't think you want to hear that." So they kind of laughed, and I said, "Okay, let's try art." And they took me to the art room, and everybody was in there drawing. And I was like, "Oh, this is really nice." I felt like it was pretty healing for me. Then I say, "Let's go to the band room." When I went in there, the whole band is partying. Everybody's having a good time, and they had all the instruments like lined on the wall. So I decided then, like, I saw the saxophone. I was like, "Do you have any more of those?" And they were like, "Oh." So it kind of started from right then. They asked me if I had any, and I said, "Oh, no." And they told me like there were other saxophone players, so you would have to wait till they, got out of school. But I went and found them and talked to them, and we made a negotiation. So I bargained like four Oreos. Or those we switched, and they went to art and I went to band.
That is so cool. I wonder what they're doing now.
One of the girls I met, she actually came to one of my shows at the Blue Note.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then two of the other people that came into band with me, they are not physician assistants, but they work at the hospital. But we talk all the time. We still have pictures of us in back in the band, but they didn't continue on.
That's so cool. And you went to LaGuardia, your the high school,
Yeah, the high school,
yeah.
I went to LaGuardia, Fiorella AC LaGuardia for high school. I went to Rutgers actually for history, but most people don't know that.
Oh my
And
gosh.
then I went to New School for my undergrad, and I went to NJCU for my master's.
Wow. That's so cool. So you're so smart on top of it all. Wow.
Well, just if there's a chance to learn, I thought it'd be a good idea.
That is so cool. Wow. Do you have any siblings?
I had one sister and she passed away. She was a younger sister of mine, so she died around
Oh, I'm
23, so
so
she's gone.
sorry. That must have been really hard.
Yeah, it was pretty hard. One of my albums I dedicated to her, but the ironic thing is she actually hated the sound of the saxophone. So
Oh my
they all
gosh.
would always tell me, "Stop playing it." So every time I play a show, I laugh and put up a little prayer for her, like, "Ha ha."
Oh, yeah, she's still with you.
Yeah, of course, for sure.
Wow, that's amazing. I remember last August. You started telling this story that you were so excited, your first gig after COVID,
Oh,
you made
right,
all this money and you're driving home to show your. Can you tell us that story?
Oh, yeah, I think you're talking about my car accident. So it was in September. And I was driving from Cleveland back to New York to do. I had done like a jazz show, so pretty much jazz performances just came back. So I had one each weekend. This was my third weekend finally back. So I was a little too scared to fly. So the band flew, and I drove myself there. So I drove from New York to Cleveland, Ohio, 7 hours, no problem. On the way back, I had slept plenty of time. I had done the show earlier that day. Samara Joy opened. I played next. Christian Sands plays, so we're all still just, getting our just getting known, right? And then I was on the way driving back, pretty much on Route 80, going from in the Pennsylvania part. I was about 4 to 5 hours outside of New York City. Sunrise was coming up. It was such a beautiful like morning. I remember doing a little prayer, thinking, "This is so beautiful." I had my car music going with some Kenny Garrett. I was like, "Oh, this is awesome." And that's the last thing I remember. Next thing I remember is just waking up like in a pool of blood, kind of like deep in the woods, it felt like. But it turns out that this way, like kind of a mountain, you fall off the mountain this way, and this way you go into it. So the car probably had crashed into the mountain. And I was just being dragged through the woods by a really, really tall guy with a thick southern accent. He's like, "We're going to get you out of here." And I was like, "Oh my gosh." So
Wow.
I thought to myself, just kind of pass out. And then as I kept waking up and going back and in and out of consciousness, he told me that I had been in an accident and he saw smoke, and that he stopped his truck, parked it, and went into the woods to kind of see what it was. And it was kind of
Wow.
me like tied up into my car. So he found a way to break me out of it and brought me back to the main road and called the paramedics. And they said, it's going to be a while till they get there, but just kind of where we were was about 30 minutes from the exit and about 40 minutes from the hospital. It was like
Wow.
deep in like Amish neighborhood. So like there's horse buggies going by. So I think I'm hallucinating. I'm just like, this is not real. And finally, when I got to the hospital, the next thing I remember just being woken up on the table, kind of strapped down all the way. And they explained to me I was in an accident, that I wasn't too coherent, and that I had a brain bleed, that they had the neurosurgeon coming in and he was going to try to fix that right away. And I asked them when I was going to make it. They said they didn't know. So I kind of just passed out again. And then from there, once I got up, they explained I had three ribs broken, my scapula was broken, my jaw was broken. They said that they did get to repair it, but that there's still some damage and they're going to have to go back in when I'm more stable. And from there, I was going to have to start the process of, trying to get back to being able to just be stable and be alive. And then they said, if you get past that stage, you're going to have to figure out how to play again, because where your jaw is broken, it's very difficult for the saxophone. So it became a whole process of
Oh
like,
my gosh.
just trying to figure it out. And during that process is when I wrote those albums, Phoenix. And luckily we took that thing all the way to three Grammy nominations. So I was very proud of that, just to imagine to go from like death. I had never been to the Grammys. I never even imagined that I could ever be nominated, or even, I never even seen it like on the TV. So just being in
Wow.
there, it was a pretty big honor for me.
That is so amazing, and it just every part of that, and your resilience, your fight to live. You must have had a lot of a long road back.
It was, and I wouldn't say I did it the most healthily. Like I was just starting to be known in the jazz world. So, right after the accident, 3 or 4 weeks later, I was supposed to do a 3 week European tour that I never did before. So I actually had hospital assistants come with me out there. They like dragged me
Really?
on the stage. Yeah, like I was like in excruciating pain, taking all kinds of medicines. Some shows I could do, some I couldn't, just trying to get through it. I wanted my team to know that, it was the middle of the pandemic, so everyone was kind of struggling for money. So I figured that I was just, giving my all, and worst things, if I can't get through it, I go home. I just So we kind of started up from there. And so a lot of my recovery happened on the road, because even during that time, only certain types of rehab were considered like not elective. So speech therapy is elective, apparently. So physical therapy is elective. So
No.
I didn't really get to like start actually starting to use my words better until like maybe 7 to 8 months, because I would be on stage talking. The little bit I could talk on, my jaw is still broke because it didn't heal in time for the tour. And then all of a sudden, not even know where I was. So I'd be like, "Hey, everybody, we're about to rock on." Like I wouldn't know what was going on at all. The
Wow.
band knew, like, she's just going to go in and out of like reality.
That is so amazing.
Yeah. If you're out there, go to the doctor. Don't.
Wow. And don't give up, huh?
Right, I tell you that.
Wow. So, such a really fire within. And you must have always had faith, but that must have really pulled you through your music and your faith. And
Yeah, I think at the time too, I wasn't on Phoenix yet. I had done an album called Pursuance to the Coltranes, to John and Alice Coltrane. And their whole mantra is healing through sound and music, and the spirituality of, everything you do is a praise to God. And Alice had a whole ashram in California with, followers, and they're praying. All her music became spiritual music. So to have an album that was based on that music, I think really helped during the time frame to get past that kind of pain and that kind of perseverance, because the music itself is a sound kind of healing music.
That's so powerful. So it's like every time you hear music, you're transformed and everyone else is transformed.
Yeah, it was really, because I mean, those audiences too at the time hadn't heard live music in like a year and a half or so. So they're coming outside for the first time, and maybe their first concert, the first time, maybe 1,000 people are able to get together,
That is a really big high.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. I mean, at the time, it was such a it was above what I could understand, but looking back, I'm glad I was able to do it.
Wow, that is so amazing. So it's electrifying spiritual aspect that just pours through you, that you just go to another place. It's so exciting. It's so amazing.
Yeah, hopefully.
Wow, and you can blend the jazz and soul and hip hop and whatever you create, right?
I mean, I'm open-minded to a lot of stuff. I mean, I've recently been working on some stuff where, saxophone is not so prevalent. I've been doing some bluegrass stuff. I've been doing
Oh,
some of the
wow.
classical stuff, because a lot of classical music too, they just really only have the sax for French Revolution. So it's nice seeing some artists like Moore and like crossover classical, adding it a little bit. And I try to just remember that my unique style can go anywhere, and I'm open to working with any type of artist as long as they're, on the same path as me.
That is so cool. So when you improvise, I guess it just you just have that framework and then it just goes, right? Wherever it goes.
I mean, most music, it's like there's some common ground somewhere, like within. I'm very sensitive to who I'm playing with and fitting myself in a certain way that complements the music, and not trying to, like, I guess, showboat and do my plan. I'm trying to, every time I play with somebody, I do our plan.
That's so cool. And your band is amazing. Can you share with about your band and what it's like to play with them and tour with them?
Oh yeah, well, I don't know the better way to describe a woman with three, four guys on the road, what it's like. It's like having really bad big brothers. They're fun, they look after me, they take care of me and stuff, but it's also good to be with people that have the same devotion to music. So like each night that we're playing, we're getting closer and closer to a higher level in music. We're on the same journey of trying to learn. We're open-minded to, none of us have big heads. I'll just say it on stage, hey, I'm messing up. Let's take it to the bridge or something, and everyone's comfortable and confident in being vulnerable then. And that's sometimes hard to find within masculinity. So it's good to have this particular group of guys, and they can all cook well, and they all, so that's good too.
How long have you been together?
The Phoenix Band, probably, there was a first group of us that was right before this accident, and we stayed together from 2021 probably until 2023. And then after that first nomination, this particular band came for Phoenix Reimagined, and they were mostly the same people, but now they're all three different. So they've been with me since, I guess, top of 2023, now into 2025, and we're still going. But
That's so
we've
cool.
known each other like from the jazz scene around. Like when I was, coming up, I saw them everywhere.
Wow, that's really amazing. And Noble Rising, can you share about that? Your
Yeah, because
nominee, well, I'm saying nomination, it's going to be nominated, right? And
we
winning.
one step at a time, I guess, but we had kind of, because of the impact of the accident, everything going on, we were having a hard time leaving Phoenix. Like people are like, Phoenix, Phoenix, Phoenix. So then we had Phoenix Reimagined. People were like, yay, and that had the two more nominations. So I kind of made Noble Rise to signify the transition that we're going through, like, because we're finishing up a new album right now as well, that's coming out 2026. But the idea was to, we're now highlighting, of course, all the wonderful things that have happened, but there's been a different type of journey, since that accident. This was the first music that I wrote after that accident. This was the first music that I tried to show. So now I'm trying to show what it's like to be, I guess, a jazz musician or a star or something like that, and how to lead in humility and grace, but also still embrace, you're still embracing the adversity that comes and the resilience that comes with it. but also showing that when you do get to some places you're trying to get and moving, you're still trying to get further, how to, it's the grace part is really important to me. Not to be it's my world. I'm a rock star. I'm this. I'm the leader. I'm the queen. I don't think that's like a good way to show my personality. So we called it Noble Rise to show, the humility that came with rising to where we are now. And then people can embrace that and move, and then we can finally move forward to, what's been going on currently.
That is so beautiful, and I know it firsthand,
Right.
watching you and experiencing your kindness and really, and I love that your outfits and your whole signature thing with the gold, and I keep thinking you have a heart of gold and just the kindness and the graciousness and the gratitude that you just display and your kindness. And how do you stay grounded?
Luckily for me, I just try to be myself, but yeah, there are things you can do on the road, of course. Watch what you eat, try to watch your sleep, try to get your meditation in, try to get your I'm big into frequency and sound healing. I get
Oh
my frequencies
yeah,
on and put
that's
them
where
through my
I'm at.
headphones. Yeah, totally. But I also just try to remember, everybody's at a different stage, but we're all going through the same thing. We're all searching for the same thing. We all have dreams. We all have times that we feel that we're failing. We all have the same adversities. And if you can embrace that stuff each way, you want when you leave the planet, the people to miss you and remember what you brought to somebody else, not for what you did, for what you your presence to be missed, for what you brought to everyone else.
No, I love that.
Are you ready to elevate your energy and awaken your dreams to their fullest potential? This isn't just music. It's transformative, intuitive healing. Sacred frequencies channeled to shift your energy, dissolve blockages, and align you with your highest potential. It's your path to vibrant health, limitless dreams, and a life of purpose. Each note is harmonized to your unique frequency, unlocking profound healing, inner harmony, and a deep rejuvenating renewal. Discover the powerful tools of sound healing you carry with you. Visit KarenOlson.com/events to sign up for the free webinar titled Release Stress and Find Inner Peace Through Sound, and explore personalized one-on-one sessions at KarenOlson.com/services. The moment for peace is now. Don't wait. Embrace the healing you deserve.
I also like to ask, for the people listening that might feel stuck or down or have these big dreams that seem so far away, would you have any thoughts of a step they could take to get closer to where they, the path they really want to be on?
Yeah, I always say one step at a time. It's so easy to say that one foot first in front of the other, but I find that if you can sometimes systematically do it, like let's say I write everything down and then I try to break it down. So let's say if my biggest dream ever was to be like, oh my God, play with Sting for a million people, right? Then I start there. Then I go, what would be the level below that? Okay, probably playing at an arena for this and that. And I keep going down. You find as you get closer and closer to the bottom, the first step may be just write the first bar of a song. Every
Oh, I
day you
love
write a bar of
that.
the song. The next week you say, okay, I've been writing a bar. So next week I write one song a day, and then I practice two or three scales. So whatever your goal is, you can find that sometimes it's hard for some people to even just put out one single.
Yeah.
But if you start from that way, you got 365 days and each day is getting towards it, you find that as long as you make sure the steps are not overwhelming, you'll get there in no time, and then you'll start raising the stakes,
Wow, that is so cool. Yeah, that you can just keep going feeling it, right? Where you're going, experiencing it. Would there be a message you might say to your younger self?
Wow. I would say start sooner than later. I always, when I was coming up, and still sometimes now, even though now I'm way better at it, I had a hard time getting started. I would, like as musicians, you always say, one day I'll be good enough. One day I'm gonna play better than this person. And as you get older and time moves by, you're still like, oh, am I better than them? So I find that that day is never coming. For people that really care about the planet, you're always upping the stakes trying to get better. So if you have something you want to do, start sooner so that you can fail right away. As soon as you fail, you know what happened to make you fail, and then you'll keep going. But if you avoid the failures, then you're never going to get anywhere.
I love that. That is so cool. Yeah, and the other thing is the comparison thing, or wanting something that's kind of unobtainable, like you want to be this way, but how are you ever going to know you made it? You know, how many people have to tell you you're great, or how many awards do you have to have? And that's almost like an obsession. So the sooner you can appreciate each accomplishment or each thing you know, if it's that phrase you love or whatever, speaking about that, does anything come to mind about moments on the stage where the audience touched you? Or when, if they're singing along, or
Oh,
if.
they just their presence always touches me like that. That's the primary thing I focus on. I come out with a set list for sure, but I'm watching them, listening to them. I can see if we're going along, abort. We need something else. They maybe need to dance more. They need me to actually,
Really?
maybe the set's a little bit too upbeat for them. Maybe they need to do be they want to be more inward, and then I can pull them out. I really,
Really? You just read them like that?
I try my best. I try to pay attention to what's going on in the
That
room.
is so cool.
Because like sometimes it's pretty obvious, it's been 30 minutes, you get in the blank stare of life, you kind of know like something's going on here. So I try to not just play all the time, but to actually communicate what I'm thinking, talking to them, make sure there's a good dialect going back and forth between them, play dialect going back and forth, play, talk some more, spoken word in the songs, maybe I rap a little bit, talk some more so that they feel
Oh yeah, you
guided.
can rap. Yeah, that is so cool. You're really amazing with that too.
Yeah, that way they feel more guided through the show. They feel like they never were not spoken to,
Wow. So some people say, what is the largest audience? And some people say it's the same as just an audience of 10 or 20. But what how there have been some huge audiences. What is that like? How big are they? Are they
Some have been big. Hollywood Bowl was 16,000. I played
Really?
once in what was that place called? It was in Bulgaria. Sofia. That festival had 50,000 people out there.
Wow.
So each setting is different, especially some festivals now, what they're doing, they're just music festivals. So because I have a more like a interaction style with the audience, they'll hire a reggae group, a Brazilian group, a rap group, and then I have to go up there with my jazz. And I'm the headliner to try to get them to dance the music that you don't dance to these days. So like I said, I find the audience engagement stuff is really something that artists should focus on right now, because the audience kind of wants to actually get to know you, and through you, they're willing to listen to the music, but it's not the other way
Wow.
around.
That's so cool that you're so open and can grasp that. It's just amazing. And speaking of which, how can people listening now engage with you and learn more about you? And can you give us your social media handles and
Oh yeah.
so they
All
can
of
come hear
my
you and
handles. Yeah, all my handles are just my name. So it's Lakeisha B, and that's spelled like Lake CIA and then B. So LakeCiA and then B. And that's for everything. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all on the board, YouTube, everywhere.
that is, I love, it's amazing what you post, and you're so, I just look forward to seeing that every day and kind of vicariously going all around the world. I can't
Yeah,
even
I'm on
imagine
there.
how do you even pack and how do you unpack and repack? I mean, how?
I would tell people light is better.
And you always look so cool. It's just, you're just such a huge inspiration and amazing. So, do you have any certain spiritual or meditation practices that help you?
I should meditate more. Right now, every time I meditate, I fall asleep, but I'm
That's
working on it.
good.
Before every show, I do like a little prayer with the band, and then I do one without them to just ask for some kind of I guess guidance to make sure that I'm not in my head thinking about my playing, focus on my own faults so that I can be open-minded to give the audience what they need at the moment. And, no matter how big it is, how whatever, pray that it can get into my mind. Whatever they're going to need right now. Because sometimes, like when an audience is intimate, you would think that's easy to engage with them, but sometimes it's difficult because they feel so right there. And also, sometimes a big crowd, while it's exciting, if they're not excited, it can sound alienated. There's so many of them. You hear them talking, you hear the chips, you hear the noise. There's 20,000 deep. The stage is far away. So it's hard to actually be an artist strong enough to engage them. So you really have to really be aware of what's going on and who you're talking to and how to talk through and not be in your head.
Wow, that is so huge. So you kind of have a little like ritual to get in you that space, and you warm up on your sax.
No, I
How
don't warm
long?
up.
You don't need to warm up?
No, I don't,
No.
I wouldn't say I don't need to, but I don't.
Well, I'm sure it's just right there, right?
I will find a reed, I tell you that. But if you're on a tour, you kind of know what it is. But I will find a reed or something. Or, but I think it happens so many times where it's like somebody wants to do press before the show. Somebody wants to do this. Just get your outfit together before the show. Or Hollywood Bowl, you can't make noise. They're gonna spin you around. So there's so many situations. Or you go on Colbert, it's cold. They put the makeup on you. Run, go. You got a cold saxophone, cold reed. So I think it's some of it. There are times where I really get to center myself and go, but most of the times I just, I gotta learn.
Just land on your feet.
Yeah, I gotta learn how to have like pacing. That's not my forte. It's all or nothing.
Oh, wow. Yes, Stephen Colbert, he was really in the headlines. Was that pretty cool?
Oh yeah. I mean, the coolest part is that his band is so awesome.
Oh.
So to be on a show where they're playing my music nonstop, all the break stops on my music, then they're featuring me on songs, then he's noticing me and hanging out with
Oh
me.
my gosh.
I know like during the days of Ella Fitzgerald and everything, jazz was on the TV forever, but now it's like rarely there. So to have like a jazz song with no vocals, anything,
Yeah.
mainstream go, I was in my own little heaven. Like you couldn't tell me anything.
So cool. And the NPR, the tiny
Oh
desk.
yeah. That was
You were
another dream of mine.
great. Does it really look like that with the
Yeah, it
library?
looks small. Oh yeah, it looks like a like it almost looks like something in your bedroom. It's a big
Is
office. It's a big office space, but it's like a little tiny area that's just.
So you're kind of squished when you play?
You're really squished. Like I felt like a giant in there, like my eye and everything around. But you can fit a lot of people there. But to me, it's like almost like I process slow. So while there, I just like getting it done, doing it. But while you're while it's going on, because that tiny desk happened like 2 day, two no 1 day. I went from Colbert to Tiny Desk. I drove that night
Wow, no way.
down to DC, did the tiny desk, and then when we did the tiny desk, I flew in a plane after the tiny desk to Jacksonville to play a festival. So it just happened very, very fast. It was like my year. It's a lot. It's hard to process the year because I remember earlier that year that was my first time being nominated. Also, first time losing like 3 times in a row, then going straight to a European tour, straight to Tiny, then I went to Inter. It was all back to back. So it's hard to process. Like,
Wow.
after talking to you, kind of see, like, oh, wow, I did all those things. But in the moment, you're just like trying to make things happen,
Wow, good going on the energy, the high vibe
Yeah,
that's
you're just
going.
trying to, you just, you know how music is. It's like that's something that artists can do from the business forces you to just. What's next? What's next? And as artists, it would be helpful if we were more like present and processing what just happened. How did that feel? But the business, as soon as you'll be on the tiny desk and they'll be saying, what's next? I don't know, the tiny desk has to come out. So, but they're already on the what's next.
So how does your manager, how far ahead do you know when the tour is, or do you have this calendar that you refer to, or does it just kind of happen?
No, there are some things that just happen, and then there is certain things like I know I'm going to Europe next year in these certain times. I know there's certain like certain performing arts centers book a year and change in advance. Some festivals book 2 months in advance. Some people just pop up and they I saw you here and I want to add you. So there is a booking season that happens business-wise, but then there's also a momentum if you have it that is encouraging it as well.
And then you have downtime when you can reboot.
No, I think that this half of the year has been the first time that we've had, like a week on tour, then a week back, then 2 days, then a week back. But within that time, we're doing a new album. So you can't really say it's downtime because all the recording, we're all gearing up for another year. So it doesn't really feel downtime-ish, even though I have been home. I have my own manual juice presser. I've been getting my oranges, apples, I did the watermelon, so that feels good.
Wow, that's amazing. And you find gyms to work at, or you're so busy, you just.
No, at home, I'm about 5 to 6 times a week working out for sure. I'm
Wow.
not going to skip it. It's not going to happen. On the road, I found that maybe with the energy I give on tour, sometimes it's just going to have to be a 3 week break. Or, in Europe, I don't know if they even know what a gym is, so they're not having it in every hotel. So I kind of some of the US dates I may get some type of working out in, but I kind of stick to it when I'm at home. I'm full time with it. On the road, I kind of gotta pause.
Wow. Well, it's so exciting, and I thank you for every time I see you, and you just light up, and you're so welcoming, and so few people are that way, and it's just, it comes through everything that you do, and certainly your playing is so wild.
I forgot about that elevator too. I remember that. It was at a power station, I think.
Yeah.
You really, I remember that day. That was great. That was a
You were
great time.
so cool. Yeah, and I was like, wow, she knows a lot of people.
Yeah,
It was so
it
cool.
can be.
That was so much fun, so many fun times. So thank you for sharing your story and your soul and your life and your music. It just shows us how faith and courage and sound can really transform us, and dreams. You are
Oh.
just pure fire and really have the love in you and the light, and it's just amazing. So I want to encourage everyone to carry their light forward through every breath, every action, and every act of kindness. So let the music and the message stay with you long after the final note. Until next time, and thank you with all my heart,
Oh,
Lakeisha.
thank you so much,
You
Karen.
are
Love
a
you guys so
special
much.
star leading so many. So keep shining, keep listening, and keep walking your path of sound and soul. Blessings and love. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so very much for joining us on today's transformative journey. We're honored to have shared this space with you, and we hope you're feeling inspired and aligned with your highest self. For more insights, resources, and to continue your path of healing, be sure to visit KarenOlson.com, your gateway to deeper sound healing, music, and wisdom. Remember, Sound Pathways is here every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV, Station 1. Until next time, stay alive, stay inspired, and let the magic of sound guide you.